There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it.
All right, JP, what's the last name? Is it Harrington?
Harrington, yeah.
JP Harrington from JP Wedgeco. Welcome to the Member Guest, the podcast. I'm super excited to have you on because I've had a bunch of people suggest that we have you come on. I'm actually talking with Tyler Fitzel tonight, and I know you know Fitz pretty well.
Yeah.
He was actually the first one that introduced me to your wedges that I saw in Second Swing. I just was like stunned with how beautiful they are. I don't know, you know, MJ from Unreal, he's coming on later this week. And then coincidentally, I was with Sam Swanson a couple days ago. He asked me to ask you how much you like fried green tomatoes.
I like them a lot. And, you know, pound for pound, I'm probably the best deep fryer in the world. You know,
what's the background here? What's going on with Swannies and JP Wedgeco?
Yeah, my dad is in the concession business growing up. Deep fried cheese curds at the Iowa State Fair, Wisconsin State Fair, and then the Minnesota State Fair. He had fried green tomatoes and corn fritters. So, you know, growing up, I spent a lot of time on the fryer.
Wow. Dude, it's such a small world, man. I'm realizing ever since we started this thing, like, we get connected to so many people in the golf world, and you're literally, like, one degree of separation from one of your best friends and whoever you're talking to, no matter where they are in the U.S., and, like, no matter what they do within the golf industry. It's crazy.
Yeah, no doubt.
So, if you wouldn't mind, and, like, I love seeing the images you got in the background there. Tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of like how you got into the wedge business, if you will. Like, it was it like a creative outlet from like an artwork perspective? Because like the stuff that you make is freaking beautiful, and I'm just curious, you know, what your vision is, how you got started, the whole thing, because you seem to have blown up and kind of taken off over the past few years.
Yeah, well, you know, it's been a long journey. I grew up golfing. I grew up in a small town, Wisconsin, just across the border, Ellsworth, Wisconsin.
Okay, yeah.
But I love playing golf. I was always one of those kids that, you know, loved going to the golf stores and looking at equipment. And I remember getting a set of, you know, 588 Cleveland wedges, these raw wedges, and I put it in there. I'm like, oh, I heard they're supposed to rust, so I put them in a wet washcloth, put them in my mom's tub, and, you know, tried to rust them, left all these rust stains on her tub. And, you know, that was kind of like the start of it. And then I remember getting a Scotty Cameron Terillium, and, you know, it has that gun blue finish on it, and I was all excited about it. I take it out to the greens, and the greens had like fertilizer on it. They just put some fertilizer on it. First time out there, I play around with this putter, and the fertilizer oxidized and took all the rusted the bottom.
Oh, no.
Of the putter. I'm like in tears.
I'm on a brand new Scotty Terillia putter too.
That's exactly. Really good. You know, so then I was like, well, it rusted the bottom, and then I took steel wool to it, so I'm taking the whole thing out. So then I made it silver, and this is all in high school and stuff like that. So I always had this element of loved it. Called
tinkering. You're a tinker. Yeah, just like me. Yeah. Just taking it to the next level.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, in high school, I started out in Fayette, you know, small town Wisconsin. We had in the fall bow hunting Fayette class where we could go bow hunting in the morning. In the springtime, we had a Fayette class fishing. So, but in order to go fishing, you know, basically skip school in the morning and then go fishing, you know, for the first couple hours of school, we had to make a fishing pole. You know, so we went to got a St. Croix blank and learned how to tie the eyes on and do that whole thing. And then I'm like, I really liked it. So I just stayed in and I just made fishing poles. Everybody went and fished during class. You know, I just stayed and made fishing poles for my grandpa and my dad and all that stuff. So I always had that artistic side to me. Love golf. Then fast forward, you know, spent 2 years at St. Cloud State getting general business credits, and then you had to declare a major. And I didn't really know what I ultimately wanted to do. I know I love golf, but so I did some research from the PGM program at Arizona State at the time. So I transferred out to Arizona State. A lot of people go to that program to be like a director of golf or a head pro at a green grass facility. I loved equipment, golf equipment. And I thought, well, maybe it was a way for me to get in the industry. You know, I remember driving out there to Arizona. I'm like, well, Ping's out there, you know, we'll see what happens. Maybe I can get a job, you know, something like that. And then the internship process of the PGM program landed me at Hot Sticks Golf in Scottsdale, Arizona, where at the time...
Hot Sticks Golf?
Yeah, Hot Sticks Golf.
I'm not familiar. What is it?
HOTSTIX Golf. And that was, I don't know if you're familiar with Cool Clubs at all.
No.
Cool Clubs is another high-end custom fitting place. Well, Hot Sticks Golf, and this was back in like 2004, basically, and it was kind of the rise of custom fitting. And so Hot Sticks Golf, super high-end, where you go in kind of like a club champion.
I was just going to say, is it like a club champion where like everything, every aftermarket shaft, you know, they tell you that you can shave 8 strokes off your handicap if you just get fit there, that type of stuff.
Yeah. So basically, a client comes in, gets fit on a launch monitor, and then they basically are getting buy the OEM products, whatever brand, and then we pull the shafts out and reshaft it to frequency, swing weight, from driver to irons to wedges, putter, the whole thing. And so I got in as an intern, you know, right at the front desk. And I, you know, after about 2 weeks of, you know, I look back and there that, they had the build shops. I'm like, hey, you want to teach me how to put on grips? So then they taught me how to put on grips. And then,
dude, that's the gateway drug right there.
I'm not going back out there to the front desk.
That's the gateway drug right there. Every time I'm in second swing, you're like, hey, do you want to learn how to put on your grips? I'm like, no, because I know what's going to happen. I'm going to end up with like a loft and lie machine in my garage. I'm going to have, you know, grips and stuff everywhere. And my hobby is going to turn into like an obsession and I'll never come back from it. So no, I don't want to learn how to put on grips yet.
Yeah, so that I you know, didn't know what I was getting myself into. You know, thought it was cool. You know, it's a great facility at the time. I mean, basically, Mark Timms was a founder, and he's all about technology. So it was a real high end process, and so then I learned the art of custom golf club building from driver to, you know, putter and anywhere in between. So we take that, we get a build ticket, and you have to build to, you know, like I said, frequency, swing weight, and all that stuff. Well, they also had, they were doing these custom wedges, were modifying existing manufacturers' wedges, call it a, you know, a Titleist or a Cleveland or a Callaway. And what they were doing is they were calling these psycho wedges, where they take the existing manufacturer's wedge, and ultimately they're doing a lot of heel toe grinds, really shaving down that heel, the toe, little trailing edge, and really allowing that wedge to open up a little more easily, let's say for a flop shot, or less drag through the turf. So they were grinding these heel toe on existing manufacturers, and then they had a Bridgeport manual knee mill where they would then inlay tungsten to get the weight back that they lost. And so I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool, right? So, you know, I kind of worked my way into, there's a guy, Trapper Steinley, who was the build shop manager, and he was doing some of these custom psycho wedges. And so then I asked him to teach me how to do it. I remember, you know, taking a wedge and the grinder's going, and I'm like, you know, I'm like all tentative, like just barely not even want to touch this thing. And then I remember
shaking hands,
like just feel it, you know? So then I'm like, all right, I did it through some sparks, and then it was like, you know, it was over. So, you know, I got a taste for that of modifying existing manufacturer's stuff, then learned how to do the tungsten inlay. And then ultimately I was able to do a wedge from start to finish. And then as custom jobs came in, I was like, cool, can I do that one? I'll do that one. And then basically I was just focused on modifying wedges and putters. So we take like Scotty Cameron's that were back at that time, you know, stock headway was like 330 grams. We put some heel toe tungsten in that, you know, answer style Scotty, or, you know, Newport stuff to get that up to, you know, 350, 360 grams. So I did a lot of that. And that was really the foundation for me to learn the art of golf club building, get a taste for modifying golf clubs. And then Aaron Baddeley, a local tour pro, lived, you know, right by Hot Sticks, and he would come in to Hot Sticks, you know, every 2 weeks and get his loft and lies done. I built a relationship with him. And so then I'd do his loft and lies every week and do some custom. He was with McGregor at the time, and he brought in a set of a real boxy squared off McGregor blades that were a little heavy, had some weight to work with. And him and his swing coach came in and said, hey, I wonder if you could do some modifications to this, maybe kind of shave the heel down. And so I did, like, it was like after hours, did like a 3, 6, and 9. You know, I grind it. He'd look at it. We'd go back and forth. And then he's like, okay, you know, he took them, built them up. He practiced with them that next day. He said, oh, you know, I really like them. Can you match the set? So I matched the set. That was like, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, practice with them that week. And then on Friday, he's like, hey, I'm going to put them in play next week. And first week in the bag, he got his first PGA Tour win. So it was like,
shut up.
Okay. No way. Yeah. You know, serious. Yeah. Yeah. So it was like,
dude, that's wild.
One of those moments where it's like, okay, you know, I want to do this, you know, it gave me that motivation and that spark to like continue down the rabbit hole and to see what, you know, I can do. And so that, you know, that was like, you know, a great experience. Then, you know, Mark Timms, Hot Sticks acquired some venture capitalists. And at the end of the day, Mark Timms left Hot Sticks Golf and started up a competitor just down the street called Cool Clubs. And so same thing, you know, high-end custom fitting. And so I remember putting it with the new management, and I put it together a proposal, and I was like, I wanted a commission on the custom work that I was doing. And they're like, oh, it's a great proposal. And then, you know, but, you know, we're not going to give you any commission, you know. So I said, well, you know, I quit. So
I want to go do my own thing then. I'll get 100%.
So I quit. But I also knew Mark was opening up another shop down the road. And so then I went and for 6 months, I went to Mirabelle and Outside Service and worked there, and then helped open Cool Clubs up. And that's where Mark gave me that freedom to be like, you know, strictly, you know, focusing on custom wedges and putters. I made my own logo. I stamped my logo in the stuff, the existing manufacturer's products that I was doing. I was able to kind of take an artistic approach, learn, get in depth with hand stamping and paint fill and some different finish options. And so that was really another next chapter in my work. And then another full circle going back. So, you know, I did those irons for Baddeley and Don White. I'm not sure you know who Don White is.
He's
one of the all-time greats. He's does national custom now. If you've heard of national custom, like hand ground irons and wedges, well, he was with McGregor making these handmade hand ground wedges and irons for Baddeley, Nicklaus. I mean, he's got like
they kind of look like Miras. I'm looking at a couple of his pictures.
Yeah, no,
they look similar to Miras.
Yeah, so he's a legend, right, Don White. And so basically, Baddeley sent those irons to Don. And then Don would make Aaron going forward his irons to mimic the grind that we did. So then it was like, that was really cool, right? So then Don White's like grinding a, you know, the replica
four iron with the same grind that he's got on his
going forward,
54.
Right? Yeah,
that's
so that
wild.
Was pretty cool. And then, then I was at Cool Clubs later on, and then the president of McGregor was in at Cool Clubs, and he's like, oh, you know, we're talking about the Aaron Baddeley irons and stuff like that. And he's like, hey, if you ever want to come out, meet Don, you know, we'd love to have you. So I was able to go out to Albany, Georgia to McGregor's headquarters and study with Don White for, you know, a few days. And so it was really cool because it's like you're entering this, like, cool clubs and hot sticks, all this high techie launch monitors and all these things for fitting and building golf equipment. And then you go to McGregor and it was like time warp back to, like, you know, the 70s, all these, they're old machines and stuff. And so then I got to watch, like, sit right next to Don, and he was grind a whole set of irons for a tour player. And, you know, I got to take notes and ask him all these questions. And he actually, you know, he taught me, one, how to measure bounce with this protractor he had and all this stuff. And so I got that same protractor. And then I asked him, like, Don, I'm having trouble with this, you know, this hand stamp. Can you help me? You know, it was too big. I lost surface area. I couldn't do it. And so then he gave me, you know, basically gave me the foundation tutorial of how to hit a hand stamp, which, you know, I took and really dove into custom hand stamping. So Don White for me, you know, has a lot of personal ties of my foundation and that. And so I was able to do that, went back to cool clubs, going down my path. And as you kind of plateau and you want to, like, what's next? You know, I decided to move back to my hometown in Ellsworth, Wisconsin. A small town, you know, 3,000 people.
Since you mentioned how small of a town it is, are you ready for one of the craziest questions you're ever going to hear? And then if you know the answer to this question, I'm going to be even more blown away. When I grew up playing town ball, how old are you?
I'm 41.
If I'm allowed to ask that. You're 41. Okay, so a few years older than me, but still might know this. I played town ball for many years, and we always played Ellsworth. And for a span of about 4 to 5 years, we played against this kid on the Ellsworth team, and he was a lefty, but he only had one arm, and he held his glove underneath his here, and he was an absolute stud, both at hitting and pitching. And you don't hear that very often or see it very often. So I was curious if you had even known who he was in Ellsworth. It's kind of a shot in the dark, but I also feel like a stud kid with one arm.
Yeah. I feel like I should know. It doesn't ring a bell, you know, kind of Jim Abbott style. He only had one hand, but, you know, the professional pitcher. But, you know, it doesn't – yeah, gosh, I wish I did.
I think a small town, there was a chance. I may as well throw it out there and see. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, I know that kid. He was sometimes I wonder what happened to him because it was wild. Like, he could literally throw – I mean, at our age, right, like a 70-mile-an-hour fastball is pretty fast for a kid in, like, middle school. Dude, this kid threw gas as a lefty with a glove in his armpit, and he would throw, and on his follow through with his left hand, he would come down, grab it out of his right armpit, put it on in one motion, and then be in a fielding position, catch it, you know, get it out of the glove, put it back. It was crazy.
Yeah, impressive. Yeah, I'm going to have to do some research. I'll get back to you on that.
Yeah,
I feel like I should know this. I almost feel like, you know, I'm letting Ellsworth down a little bit.
Letting Ellsworth down. I don't know if we have any listeners from. Actually, we might have some listeners from Ellsworth after this episode. But okay, so you moved back to Ellsworth, Wisconsin, and then what happens?
Yeah, so I had my dad. Like I mentioned, he's in the concession business, doing deep fried cheese curds and fried green tomatoes. Well, that's part of the year, and the other half of the year, he had like a greenhouse business growing, you know, flowers wholesaling it, and so. He had a pole shed in the country of Wisconsin. I moved back. I got a small business loan that he had to co-sign for me. The bank would give me any money. I got some money, spent it all on some equipment, grinders and things like that. And I set up shop in my dad's pole shed in small town, Wisconsin, not exactly the location for high-end custom wedges, you know? But
hey, there is some good, there's good golf in Wisconsin though, man. Let me tell you what.
Yeah, for sure. So set up shop there. That was in 2009, like spring of 2009. At the time, you know, I had built a relationship with Mira through Cool Clubs, and Mira would supply me with overweight wedges, kind of like a finished wedge head, but it was like 25 grams overweight that I could grind the sole down and the bounce and do my thing. And then I did some custom hand stamping. And, you know, I was able to kind of piggyback on a sponsorship with a guy on Golf WRX to kind of showcase my work. And so that's what I did. I did these custom, you know, some custom wedges, posted them on Golf WRX. And then I started to, you know, build a little following and kind of a cult following on my work. So everything I do, I post it on there, and then my Golf Spy as well. And then November comes around and that pole shed is not insulated and it's getting cold. And I'm like, what am I going to do here? So then my mom, she lived in St. Louis Park, still does, right off of the Minneapolis Golf Club. And she has two car garages heated. She said, come on and move up with me and you can work out of our garage and we'll, your stepdad and I will park in the driveway. So they did that.
Amen. Bootstrapped organization right there.
Yeah.
Love to,
you know,
see it.
So they parked their cars in the winter in the driveway. So I could kind of, you know, really, carve my, you know, path and what I was trying to do. So I moved into her garage, St. Louis Park. And my whole goal is to ultimately create my own wedge line. And so, you know, I had no money. I'm just trying to, I can't afford to tool my own forging dies to create this. So I sent some emails out to Japan, right? There's a foundry called Kyoei in Ichikawa, Japan, just across the river from Mira. And actually there's Mr. Mira-san and Kyoei, there's some family ties and some history there. And so I sent an email out to try to see if I could find my own raw blank that I could create my own line with, and, you know, didn't hear anything. And then, you know, months later, I get an email, you know, from Kyoei. And so they sent me some forgings. It just so happened to kind of align with the golf show was coming up in Orlando. So I did some prototypes and then they were at the golf show. So I met with them and showed him my stuff and there said, oh, you know, if you're ever in Japan, you know, come and stop by the, you know, the
if you're ever in Japan.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
If you're ever in Japan,
casually
say, stop by,
yeah,
ask
just
for
DM
Mira.
Me.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, that's cool. You know, so I'm going, then I'm like, we laugh, part ways and I'm walking around, you know, so I'm like, all right, look online when the Japan golf show is. And it's like the next month. And then I ran into him later that day. I said, oh, actually, as a matter of fact, I'm going to be at the Japan golf fair next month, which I just made plans, you know, kind of shooting from the hip.
You play cool, man. Yeah. You play cool. Absolutely. Oh yeah. The Japan golf show is next month. I'll be there.
Yeah. You know, actually I'm going to be there. Well, maybe I could stop by, you know? So I booked my ticket. I flew up to the Japan golf fair, met them, and they, you know, basically welcomed me with open arms. And that was in Tokyo. We had to take a series of trains down to Ichikawa. And they let me stay on site at their traditional Japanese home.
That's really cool, man.
Yeah,
that's
so
really
I stayed
cool.
There. And they gave me, like, free reign to kind of snoop around. And I was able to get grinding lessons from Okamura-san, the master grinder, the master forging and the plating guys and stuff like that. And so it was a really great experience. One of the things is like, I remember but unfortunately when I traveled there, I got really sick. I mean, I like my throat was like closing up on me. And so I'm like, I'm trying to hide that I'm not sick. And then I put me on.
Yeah. Was it just like the food or was it?
No,
travel?
I just got like a bad cold or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
Got something.
Like my throat. It wasn't a food issue, but then, so then I first
didn't happen to be like around 2020 to 2022, did it?
No, this was like, you know, this was probably like 2010.
Oh yeah. We're way in the past. Okay, got it.
Yeah. So anyways, they threw me on they're like, put me on the grind line in the production line. And they're sitting on the, you know, tree stumps and like with these big grinders and doing all these like moves to like grind these wedges, and they like put me on this. So I'm like sitting on a tree stump. I'm sick. I'm trying to hide that I'm not sick. They give me safety glasses. I can't see through these safety glasses. I'm like, hey, take these off. And I'm trying to, you know, I'm like a freehand grinder, right? They're putting their, you know, their elbows on their knees and doing all these moves. I'm trying to do it. It's just like it was comedy hour. So anyways, that was a great experience. And then I get to lunch and I'm like, I can't hardly even swallow any food. And they knew what was up and they're like, JP-san, you need to go to sleep, go to bed. So they like,
take a nap, brother.
And like, literally, I thought I was going to like, I couldn't even swallow. Like, and that, so they go, I go into my bedroom, you know, traditional Japanese style. They give me some special medicine. And all of a sudden, you know, hour by hour, my throat just starts getting like slowly better and better. I'm like, so they healed me. They taught me how to grind. They gave me the, you know, it was just a great experience. So I took that, came back home, was able to get my own forging to create my line, my first JP line, which, you know, from the, in the garage shop in St. Louis Park. And then, you know, from there, 2013.
Rest is history, yeah.
2013 Titleist rant called one day. Got a voicemail from Titleist, figured I better call that one back. And then that was the spring of 2013. And by July, I packed my bags out to California and with a, like a 5-year deal with Titleist to produce a JP by Titleist premium wedge. So I did that, you know, and then that time passed and it was time to write my next chapter. So I went back out on my own, stayed in California. And now I got a shop here in Vista, California. And
Where's Vista? Is that like San Diego or is it more?
Yeah, San Diego. It's neighbors to Carlsbad, California.
Do you know Anthony Taranto?
Yeah, I don't know him that well. I know of him, you know.
Because I know he's in that area and he's like a wedge stamper artwork guy. And I was going to ask, I mean, obviously you have it's a little bit different for you because you're building your own wedges, but it's been wild to see how over the last, you know, just since golf has blown up, how many people are starting to do more like custom wedges, custom finishes, custom sets, the whole thing. And one of the folks I was talking to is like, you need to ask JP, like, at what point, if any, are you really sacrificing, call it the playability of your wedges or irons or whatever you're customizing versus like, it's just the look and the feel, right? Like, is there a point of diminishing return when you're doing too much to a golf club? Or, you know, is it mainly, you know, you leave the face, the bounce, and whatever you do on the back, whatever you do elsewhere kind of is what it is. And I'm curious to know how much it can really affect your play or like the performance of the specific wedge for whatever grind, loft, lie type of wedge it might be. Is there any correlation or am I overthinking it?
Well, there can be some correlation there. Depends on what you do. For me, my foundation is always on the highest quality materials. I want to build as much performance into the product because I care about the performance. That's number one. And then as an artist, I'm able to kind of use both sides of the brain and like do the engineering properties and all about performance and then make it look good at the end of the day. So for my stuff that I produce, there's no sacrifice of performance to get the aesthetic because I kind of do it all hand in hand. But, you know, there can be, you know, if you do, let's say, you know, do some grinding and stuff like that and you don't put the weight back or, you know, there's the center of gravity, which is a sweet spot. So if the ball gets contacted on the center of gravity, you're going to have the most energy transfer at impact, which is going to result in consistent distance control, feedback, feel, spin, as it works with the groove. So you want to adhere and maintain the engineering principles that one going for. And then at icing on the cake, you want it to look good. And that's my philosophy. So it's quality, performance, and then aesthetics, always in that order. You know, you can, like if you do stamping paint fill on the back of a wedge, you know, that's typically not going to affect the integrity of the wedge. But if, you know, you do certain things, certain finishes or something like that can have some effect. So, it's important that, you know, you're doing it the right way to not affect performance.
So then like on the topic of, materials, I mean, I would say of all the things that I know about, you know, when it comes to drivers, irons, you know, just like golf equipment in general, I probably know the least about wedges, to be honest with you, when it comes to types of grinds. And I mean, I generally understand bounce. Like I'm always of the opinion more bounce is your friend, like utilize the bounce. But just generally speaking, I think a lot of, casual golfers or even like good players out there really take for granted how much a wedge can improve your game, because especially if you're not an elite golfer, you're missing more greens than normal. You're using wedges just as much as you are your putter. I mean, comparatively speaking to all the other irons, woods, and the driver in your bag, like you're hitting wedge the most, especially for the guys that duff it and have to hit it again, right?
Right.
But when we talk about like materials and just wedges as a, you know, group of golf clubs, how different is it across all the manufacturers? And you know, it's throwing you in there too, like how different are the materials, the grinds and all that stuff? Or is it more like, you know, it's kind of, in my opinion, when I think about putting, for me, it's look, it's feel, it's weight, it's that type of stuff. But generally speaking, you're talking about very similar materials, unless you're talking about changing the face. I'm curious to just understand the world of golf wedges and how it might vary from manufacturer to manufacturer, or if we're really talking about a product that is consistent across the different manufacturers, and it's more, you know, how I view a putter, which is look, feel, confidence, you know, that type of stuff. Do you have any like insight? Because you've seen so many wedges at this point in time in your life, and obviously you build them too. So, you know, I imagine every manufacturer wants to use the best materials out there, and they're going to do that. So, you know, at what point are we talking about, you know, it's a look, feel, and brand thing more than, you know, one company is making a better wedge than the other?
Yeah, well, there is a lot that goes into it, and not all wedges are created equal. You know, going just quick touching base on the materials, there's kind of two types. You know, there's casting or forging. You know, casting is like, you know, they're heating up metal to like a liquid form and they pour it into a mold and then it cools. It takes the shape of the container. The problem with casting is that there's little air bubbles, also called porosity, that can get embedded inside that golf club head. And, you know, you can have hot spots and it's not as consistent. Forging, they heat up a bar of metal called a billet to like a hot marshmallow, right? And then they pound it into that shape and they compress all those little air bubbles or porosity that might have been in that steel. And it's that's where you get that grain structure. So
like when people see hand forged, that's what that means. That's,
yeah,
like,
I mean, it, typically it's wedge. Not hand forged. It's a big ton, a lot of tons of pressure coming down on a big, huge forging machine that's compressing this. You know, I use forgings. That's like, you know, this forging is a superior, you know, than casting. So it depends on the company. Some people use casting, some people use forgings. Castings are a little cheaper to produce. There's a lot less work at the end of the day to get the final product. So, you know, the different manufacturers, they have, you know, budgets and things like that. So I will say that, you know, there is that play, but the main driver, the difference is turf interaction, right? Because that sole, that wedge is going to contact the turf, and the last thing you want that thing to do is stick in the ground, hit a little behind
trunk it.
And then it gets inside your head, and then you start decelling that impact, and a lot of bad things can happen. So
I've been there, brother. I'll tell you what.
Yeah, and so it's they talk grind. It's just a grind's another word to say sole design, or and there's bounce and all these things. So there's a combination. There's really three things that affect the resistance to digging, which is the bounce angle, which controls that leading edge height. The higher the bounce angle, the higher the leading edge height will be, the more effective bounce it will have, or the resistance to digging. Sole width plays a part in it. The wider the sole width, the more surface area it has to resist digging. And then there's thirdly, which I really dive into, is camber. Camber is curvature. They can, you know, interchange those words seamlessly. Camber, the more curvature you have on the sole from leading edge to trailing edge, it adds effective bounce or resistance to digging. So it's a combination of really those main three elements. And all the companies kind of do it a little differently. You'll notice a lot of traditional wedges out there have a crisp or sharper leading edge. And that's just, they've been doing it that way for a long time. for me, I take a different approach, and I really have a curved or cambered leading edge. It's rounded, right? So as that wedge hits the ground, it's not going to step, catch, and snag as much with that sharp. If it had a sharp leading edge, it's going to want to slide right a little bit. So I am a big proponent of this forward camber, which I call JP camber. I got a new
you know who loves that that design that you have is Spizinger.
Oh yeah,
Zinger loves that, man. I feel like I saw him hit that wedge when we played down at his private club in like Rochester. I can't remember what it's called. It might just be Rochester Country Club.
Yeah, but, man, he can get up and down for bogey from anywhere.
Yeah, it's wild. He was saying nothing but good things about it. And I saw,
he's a great guy.
I saw Michael E. Jordan, Unreal Michael Jordan. I always have to delineate between the two because, I can't be out here saying that you made custom wedges for Michael Jordan and then I get in trouble. I saw Michael Jordan playing him down in San Antonio at Briggs Ranch. He was saying the same thing. He's like, I don't feel like I dig as much with him. Like, I feel like there's a lot more, you know, I think the word he used was forgiveness. And now that you kind of break it down, it's making sense in my head. Like, we're not talking about, you know, none of us get paid to play golf, right? Like, we're out there playing for fun. And really what he was trying to say instead of more forgiving was he's not digging into the ground, right? Like, he just kind of play a nice stock shot most of the time. And the interaction with the turf and his ball, whether he's playing in Arizona or Minnesota on different types of turf conditions, is going to give him feel like a lot more feel and more forgiveness is the way that he was describing it. So, and he did a really good job on his wedges too, by the way. It was really cool to see the Unreal logo on there. Those are sweet.
Fun project. Yeah. I mean, so I do that, forward camber. I want everybody to benefit from that. So for me, I don't like changing too many things at once. So from my low bounce to my mid bounce to my high bounce, right? A low bounce wedge is going to be more knife-like. It's going to be more apt to cut and dig into the ground, much like a knife would. High bounce will want to resist digging more. And so for me, I only change leading edge height. I keep all those other variables constant, coupled with a real aggressive heel toe relief, you know, dating back to my hot 6 days, allowing you to really open that club face up, hit those delicate flop shots, and then still have that forward camber on there. And so depending on your swing type, if you're really steep and you tend to take a big divot, it's really about getting that leading edge height at the optimum spot at impact so you can have that efficient turf interaction and that forgiveness just in case you don't hit it perfect every time. And so if you're steep, generally, you know, let's say, you know, you got a steep angle of attack, right? Descent to the golf ball. But that's also coupled with, like, shaft lean, right? So, or D-loft. So the more you D-loft the club at impact, that leading edge is going to get closer to the ground, making it more knife-like. And so if you do that, you need to offset that, your swing type, with a higher bounce so you get that ideal leading edge height at impact. Conversely, if you are more of a sweeper and you don't typically take big divots, and if you used a high bounce wedge in that scenario, that leading edge height would be too high off the ground, and then you might blade the ball, right? Because you're not de-lofting
it
deep. And so therefore, you kind of got to narrow down, well, what effective bounce is best for your game in your swing type and what type of shots you want to hit. And so then you can kind of narrow down, are you low bounce, mid bounce, or high bounce? And then, you know, for me, I build that cambered leading edge, which really provides really smooth, clean turf interaction, as well as, you know, when you hit a little behind it, you can get away with it and not, you know, you're not leaving it, you know, 20 feet short. You're ultimately getting it pretty darn close to the hole like you would if you hit it flush.
Yeah, I absolutely love when we start to dive into the technicals of this stuff because Andy couldn't join us today, but we love to dive into those types of details. And I would like to hear your opinion on how, you know, call it, I don't even say evolution, just like how launch monitors have really changed the way that we all get fit for clubs and practice and really dial in our games and help take it to the next level. And I think from a wedge perspective, that is where I find the most value in using launch monitors because, you know, when you're talking about like stock 987654, your, you know, if you're a decent ball striker, your variability, we're talking about like 10 yards, right? But when we start to get into wedge play, we're talking about, you know, you can use your 54 degree and you might have to use it for a 10-foot chip and you might have to use it from 100 yards out, everywhere in between, high flight, low flight, the whole deal. As you've been fitting people and you've been making wedges over the years and starting to use launch monitors to do that, has anything really stood out to you in terms of like spin, launch, bounce, loft, everything that like it almost, I don't want to say turn your world upside down, but you know, call it 10 years ago, we didn't have all the information that we do now and a lot of the data. And then you know, what you're building today, looking back now, you're like, man, I really wish I would have understood that more. You know, what does maybe the casual golfer, even a person like myself, not understand about the way, you know, the wedge grinds and everything maybe affect spin and affect launch? And, you know, when I build my bag, I'm like, you know, my 58, it's my high stock, my flop, my 54, I use that for chipping all around. And my 50 degree is, you know, more stock full shots. And over this last year, I've really realized I need to switch my thinking into, I should be able to use all three of those things to hit a very similar shot. And that's going to make your job really difficult. And so it's a very long-winded way of asking the question of, you know, with launch monitors and now and understanding how much variability there are with wedges, how can, you know, people really start to understand how to play their wedges better and what should they be thinking about that they probably didn't before? Like when they just go pick up a 9-iron, you're like, yeah, it's my 150 club.
Yeah, well, you know, launch angle and spin rate are obviously two big factors. And so you want to have consistent launch angles and you want to be able to have consistent spin rates for the different shots you're hitting. The cool thing about launch monitors is you can tell, you know, you can get an RPM number and that can translate to how you're holding power on the green. If you're a really high spinner, and you're approaching, you know, 12,000 RPMs on a full shot, you got to be careful, let's say, because you might rip that ball right off the green. And so having that a combination of launch angle and spin to get that dialed in for your shot type so you can, you know, control that spin when it hits so it, you're landing it and it's not, you know, ripping back, you know, 30 feet back when you landed a pin high and things like that. And so that's one great thing about a launch monitor is you can kind of start to understand the spin rates and the launch conditions on your game and then how they translate to the different shots you're going to hit. And then you can ultimately take that to the course. Another thing that is big is, again, that sole or that leading edge height and impact and where that ball is hitting on the face. If it's too high in the face or too low, you're not going to get, you know, let's say the ideal launch conditions or spin rates. And so having that ideal leading edge height at impact correlating to where the ball's impacting on the face to promote, you know, the best launch conditions and spin rates for your game. So the sole does play a role in that as well and having that appropriate bounce. So from the casual golfer, you know, it is just picking any old wedge off the rack and not and just hitting it without maybe being fit or understanding what type of swing type you are and getting a wedge that might help you or cater to your swing is really important because it's going to give you that consistency and that forgiveness. So that's a big thing with launch monitors. Lie angle is also another a big thing. So if you have, you know, if you need an upright club and that toe's digging, hitting the ground first, that's going to cause this twisting and things like that. So having that sole contacting flushly on the ground is also a big important thing. And you can, from a launch monitor, you can get side spin and all those things. And I have a high speed video camera that you can like really just see at impact where the grooves are, help if they're parallel to the ground, if they're, and then you can really dial that in. So it's really just getting you more and more consistent and fine tuned, you know, through this technology that we have today and understanding it. So yeah, I mean, the fitting process is big to be able to do.
Yeah, I mean, from a wedge perspective, you know, I'm starting to dial in my bag for the year and I'm playing all mine standard right now, but the biggest change I made was my called my 4-iron through my 8-iron. I had historically been a 1-flat guy, and I went through a lot of, you know, changes in the off season and all this stuff. And I literally went up. I'm 2 up on every single one of my clubs until I get down to my 9-iron and below, which I still need to go. Probably going to talk to Tyler about this, about what I need to do with those too. But it's just crazy. Like, we're talking about 3 points in a lie angle, right? Like, going from what I thought was 1-flat to 2 up, and all of a sudden I'm like actually able to hit a 4-iron. And yeah, my swing's changed, but not like, you know, to the point that you would think you'd be changing your lie angle by 3 points. So it's, I'm excited to uncover things next with the wedges. I would absolutely love to come down and see you in San Diego and maybe do like a custom wedge fitting with you, because I just love how sweet the wedges look. And I'll make sure that everybody, you know, sees you on Instagram and gives you a follow. And so, and you got stuff in Second Swing stores right now. I know I always see the stuff in Second Swing. Yeah, I imagine you got stuff local to you, but like, where else can people find JP Wedges? Like, do you have a website? Is it in like PGA Superstores, or where's your cool stuff at?
Yeah, so just releasing this new line, JP Camber. Before that, I had JP Premier. JP Premier is a super premium wedge, multi-material wedge that was in a very high price point. I did a project with Second Swing with that in their handmade sticks side of things. And I got this new line,
Clary,
coming out. And, you know, website direct, you can be able to purchase them on the website. We can get them custom built to any spec you want. There's some aesthetic options as well. But I'll also be working with a Club Champion coming out with the new line.
Cool.
So that'll be a place that we can definitely check out and get fit for the JP Camber line. And you can also get the Premier line through them as well.
That's awesome, man. It really is. I 45 minutes flies by. I really appreciate you sharing your story. It's been really cool to see how you've come up. It sounds like you started out making fishing poles and doing work in mom's garage, and now you're living in San Diego and made wedges and irons for people on tour. And I should ask, is anybody, like, who's the most famous either person that's gaming your wedge, or do you have any like high profile people that are gaming any JP stuff right now?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some people out there. I did recently a set for Mike Piazza.
Yeah. I haven't heard that name in a while.
Yeah, I know. Sounds like it. Yeah, that was cool. A baseball guy. So yeah, I mean, there's definitely some higher profile people that go, especially with that Premier line. But the new JP Camber line is going to be a good one. It's one piece forged milled. It's going to feature that same JP Camber sole that's on the Premier at a more accessible price point, starting at $295. So it'll be good. I'm excited about it.
That's awesome. And then my last question for all the listeners out there, shafts and wedges.
Mm-hmm.
Any takes? I mean, because like, I know you're primarily doing the heads. Like, do the stock shafts come in and you're putting them in all the heads? Or like, I know a lot of people are starting to do aftermarket shafts, whether it's in irons. Obviously, like the fairway woods and drivers, it's the most popular. I'm starting to see them bleed over into putters, like with the breakthrough golf stuff. What are you throwing in your wedges right now? Or are people overthinking it? Like, when it comes to wedges, just use stock shafts, stock shield shafts.
No, I mean, wedge shafts are a big part of it. I'm a big fan of KBS. They have a great lineup of different shafts that can do different things for your game. But, you know, rule of thumb, there's not a bad thing to kind of blend your iron set into your wedges. For your wedge shafts, you get that consistency.
Consistency, yeah, for sure.
Is always a good thing. Kind of rule of thumb, I don't mind if there's an option to like, bump up in gram weight for like 10 grams heavier in your wedges than your irons, gives just a little bit more feel around the greens and things like that. But, you know, having some consistency from your iron set to your wedges, because irons and wedges are very similar, right? You know, they're precision scoring clubs. So having those same launch conditions translate to your wedges is also something to think about. And then, you know, lob wedge, you can kind of, sometimes you can change that up and try to, if you want to maximize spin and get some shafts that might spin a little bit more, things like that. But, you know, I'd recommend, you know, bumping up in gram weight a touch, blending from your iron set to your wedge shaft is not a bad idea.
Yeah, makes complete sense. We're geared up for, I know you've been probably playing golf in San Diego for a few months now, but we're gearing up for it here in Minnesota. It was like 65 and sunny yesterday, and I was inside working just like, and it's March and I could be playing golf right now. So I know our listeners are, they're getting fit, they're getting their clubs for the season. I would absolutely love to meet in person next time down in San Diego, and really appreciate you coming on the member guest, the podcast here with us, JP. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon. And again, can't thank you enough for your time.
You got it, Jordan. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we'll see you, JP.
All right, see you later.